We're back with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with Kurt Brown, a poet, an anthologist, an editor, a man with great vision, and the courage to take on the bringing together of science and poetry, and has done so wonderfully in The Measured Word and in a book called Verse and Universe, where he's collected poems that that deal with the sciences. We went away with a, a bow toward Kurt Gödel. There is a book called Gödel, I can't, my German is non-existent, Escher and Bach, and it tries to do this same kind of thing of tying together different ways of looking at the universe. Now, with all due respect to Richard Hofstadter, I have yet to be able to really understand what he's saying in that book. And I say that because I have that for many years, stayed away from poetry because I was sure it was good and I was sure it was smart, but I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And your colleague Thomas Luck said, "It's okay, Paula. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. Then go someplace else where you do get it." Mm-hmm. Isn't that part of what has happened in the last few years, that poetry too has its very smart people you maybe don't understand?
Yes, sure. There's a lot of postmodern poetry, avant-garde poetry that doesn't mean a lot to me, that I don't have a lot of access to. But I taste it and I try to read it and I pay attention to it. Maybe I'll get there someday, maybe not. But like anything else, I think we just have to approach, I would say to poets, don't be afraid of science or math. Approach it. Understand what you can understand about it. Even if you can understand one little concept, isn't that great? It's a little door that it will open up for you.
Like you and prime numbers.
Like prime numbers, right? It could just give you a little glimpse. All it can do is to help you in your work and your mind and your thinking. It's the same thing for people who come to poetry. I just say, come and find out what you'll know. What appeals to you, and what you understand, and what is meaningful to you, and what isn't, and leave the rest, just like a plate of food, or wine. If you don't like it, just go on to the next thing. You don't have to like. You're never going to like it all or understand it all. It's just not going to happen.
So don't do what I did for too many years and just stay away from all of it.
Right, because we had a bad experience, and I had some bad experiences. You know, when I went to the University of Connecticut as an undergraduate, and I was finished in 4 years, and I had one more extra semester to go, and I just needed three more courses. And I decided and I was in humanities. I decided for some reason that I was going to broaden myself. So, you know, do something that would improve me. So I took calculus.
Oh, my
advanced
Lord.
Calculus. Well, I kept beating my head on the wall saying, why did you do that? I almost flunked out and didn't graduate. I had to get a tutor. I finally got through. Maybe it did it, but it did broaden me away. I learned about equations and graphs and quadratics and all of that.
And
so
tutors.
I did actually, through the tutors. So I did actually learn something, but it was really tough. But, you know.
This conversation, and it could sound academic, is if we're talking about something that is sort of out there, and yet these discussions about dogma, an open universe as opposed to a closed, fixed universe, a dynamic universe, you know, it goes back to the Reformation. I'm sure there are other historical precedents. It goes back to the Enlightenment, and it's something we deal with today. That quest, the desire for certainty, regardless of facts. Versus, an openness and an acceptance of what's going on, and it affects the politics of America and the politics of the world.
Mm-hmm. And everything else.
And I say that because, you know, this is not an abstraction. This directly relates to the lives we live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, you know, there is a hunger for a truth that. People that's an absolute. Just as poets and scientists, though, you know that there are whatever the absolutes are. You probably are not going to be able to grasp them with language, and you're not going to be able to grasp them with formulas or in mathematics. Although mathematics certainly comes closer to being absolute in a way than language would to being replicatable and. Perfect in that way, but again, going back to what Keats says, I am not uncomfortable with not knowing. I'm not uncomfortable with that. And I think most writers wouldn't be uncomfortable with that.
And yet, if you look at the big world right now, if we have one challenge, and I would say we have many, it is that people are unwilling to be uncertain. Mm-hmm. Let me put that more positively. That sounds mm-hmm. all complicated. If I am afraid of uncertainty, then I'm in real trouble because there is so much uncertainty. And that is what the current story about the universe is telling us, that it is very uncertain. And to reject that and to have one answer to everything mm-hmm. causes catastrophe.
Yeah, I like what you say about what the current story of the universe is telling us. It is a slippery story because the minute we think, going back to Heisenberg for a minute, the minute we think that we're starting to really nail it down, we look closer and then, something there just happened that does not fit with everything we know. And the whole thing doesn't come crashing down, but it alters and it slips away again. It's very, very elusive. It's when you look into the microscope and you think you see something, you say, oh, that's really interesting. That's interesting. Uh-oh, it's my eyelash. I'm looking at myself again.
It's something living on my eyelash.
That's right. And so it's very elusive. And, you know,
and that's the kind of thing that a poet
wonderful.
Would do.
Yeah, yeah. I find that quite wonderful, that it won't be pinned down. It's greater than us. I'm willing to go into the unknown that way and wait to see. With a certain amount of faith that there is some meaning, that there is something. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether I can reach it directly, but I can. But the curiosity of trying to find it, the journey is very interesting.
We were talking before we started about Stuart Kaufman. One of the things that always
who is a theoretical biologist
occur to me. He talks about the adjacent possible, and he talks about it really in a chemical context. But then
that's a nice phrase. The adjacent possible.
And he borrowed
see, that's
it.
A phrase I'll steal.
No, it's yours.
You're welcome to it.
No theft involved. And he takes it out of chemistry. He didn't invent it. This is a word that chemists use. Back to chemical bonding and the Darwinian process being fundamental to the universe as we know it. That the adjacent possible. Bill?
Well, what he's saying is the universe expands. And he's mm-hmm. talking, you know, again, the chemical, and he's saying, you know, if you're at this reaction step, you're one reaction step from the next reaction.
Which is adjacent
which
and
is
therefore
adjacent.
Possible.
But he turns around and applies it to economics, he applies it to a whole range of things, and it's part of what I think appeals to you about it, mm-hmm. because wherever we are one step from something, someplace else. Yeah. And frequently, and one of your authors, I think, points it out, things happen at the margins, mm-hmm. things happen mm-hmm. at the edge. They don't happen in the middle of the herd. It's, you know, nothing much happens in the middle of the herd except mm-hmm. dust and stuff. But at the edges, you meet lions and tigers, and mm-hmm. you see what's going on in the world out there. Mm-hmm. And that seems to me part of this, you know, and I think this is the Stuart's word, you know, growing into mm-hmm. the world around us. Mm-hmm. And we're continually doing that, as does the universe. I mean, astrophysicists mm-hmm. are now talking about that.
You'll see the same word applied in the sciences and in literature and in poetics. And that word is breakthrough. That's what a poet is trying to do, is to break through to some new, deeper level of themselves, some new understanding, some new insight, some new style, some new form that they can work in. However, it's important to keep Walter Pater's dictum in mind. There's no progress in the arts. There's no progress in the arts. Because if there were, then, in fact, a statue by Praxiteles from the, whatever it was, 3rd century B.C., 4th century B.C., wouldn't be beautiful to us anymore, because beauty will have... So there's no progress in that sense, in
That's
the
great.
Sense, in the same that there is in science, apparently, that we know more and more and more as we go along. And the new thing cancels out the old thing, in a sense. That was only a step, and then there's a... you know, each new...
However, it is, you know, this is Newton stating that he was building on the shoulders of giants. And it's that same, and art and science, sure. It's all a process of accretion, of growing by taking what has gone before.
Right.
And changing it, maybe improving it, maybe not improving it, but saying things. I think going back to the poetry, saying things. One of your writers said, saying it in a way that demonstrates that what had been said before was not sufficient to recreate the experience. I'm mangling the idea, but that, you know, the fresh way of seeing reality or experiencing reality.
Yeah.
And to build on that, in The Measured Word, another of your authors says that both the sciences and poetry make a cut in the universe and then interpret the wholeness. Well, I was, a cut in the universe, a cut in the whole. Both of them do this so as to look at a whole and to then put together both that which is factual and that which is versus that which is truthful. That, again, the wholeness remains, and when we lose track of the wholeness, we've lost the point that both the sciences and the poetics are looking at the universe.
The universe, yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, although there was a famous writer at the end of the 19th century whose name escapes me right now, and I'll think of it in a minute, but he called, at that point, because of the great progress that science had made and the impact it had on society, he began to use the word multiverse, that there were these different possibilities for these different realities.
Which is another way of looking at it. We'll be back in a moment with Kurt Brown with more ways of looking at the universe or the multiverses, you pick, when we return with The Paula Gordon Show. Be with us.